Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome. I believe we have Dr. Cal Leffler on the phone right now. Are you here, Dr. Cal?
Yes, I'm here, Judy. Glad to be here tonight for another Real Estate Wheel teleconference call.
Sounds great. So we're very excited because it's going to be our last session for the season. And we're going to start kind of where we left off on the rotation. It's going to be finding your first home on a budget.
That's great, Judy. I just can't imagine. It's already the end of 2016. Can you?
Just a second. Okay. I've got kids at the door. This is not good.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're glad to be able to do these calls for everyone and glad that those can attend both live and, of course, the recorded call sessions as well. Again, we're looking at a new season beginning in January that's going to be a lot of new content and new approaches to a new year as we have a new president in the U.S. and we'll be watching closely as the trends may be affected as far as the economic or other concerns in real estate. So you might want to be sure to stay tuned to these calls on Thursday evenings as we continue to keep you apprised of the best techniques in the different markets at the time. And at this point, again, tonight, we're going to finish out the year talking about, as Judy said, finding your first home on a budget. Clearly a very important topic, one, again, that doesn't hurt to review several different times, even if you're actually buying a second home or even a third home, because obviously you want to be very careful about making sure you can afford to keep the home as the economy continues to shift and change, and that way, you know, you've made a good investment that you'll be able to hold on to for the long term.
Yes, that's all very true, and it's one of the most important things that a person can do is get their opportunity to buy their first home. And that's what I've been very blessed to help a lot of people with, that process. So I would like to be able to share some of the information that I found out during this process so that I can make sure that people are getting the right advice when they approach the issue of buying a home. And especially first-time buyers, they always need to consider their budget for the most part.
So, Judy, let's go ahead and jump in here then. Are you ready to get started?
Yeah, I am ready.
Okay. Well, let's start with a question that a lot of people have, especially if they're a first-time home buyer, and that is owning a home just like renting, or what would you say is different?
Well, that's a good point, because especially when most people are used to being renters, they have a different viewpoint on how this thing actually works. So in some ways, yes, owning a home is like renting in some ways because you are paying monthly payments and you must do it every month and you must do it on time. But there is some very, very huge and basic differences that with your own home, part of the money is going toward your ownership and not your landlord's ownership. And unless there's, of course, an HOA, Homeowners Association, fee and ownership, then no one can tell you what to do with your house. So you can paint, you can extend your house, you can garden, you can remodel, or you can have a workshop in the garage. So there's a lot of things you can do if it's your own house, but if you're renting, you can't really do those things. And, of course, it is the American dream and the pride of ownership to actually have your own home and have an ideal atmosphere to raise your family.
Well, family is certainly important in whatever situation you have. So why then, Judy, would owning a home on a tighter budget, if that's what happens, better than renting?
Well, a tight budget is always something that's challenging for anybody, no matter what you're doing. Of course, the most important is that buyer's well-being. There are essentials in our lives. We always have to think of food, heat, clothing, of course, companionship, and then after this comes shelter. But when you own, of course, you're taking control not only of your present time, but of your future. And as time goes by, rents could go up, and you could be spending more and more money on just rent, which doesn't give you any rights whatsoever. But with the right loan, the mortgage cost could stay exactly the same. So what you are doing essentially is stabilizing your expenses for the future while inflation goes up. The potential in being a homeowner is that you can build equity, which means that your home could go up in value over what you paid for it. And then if you sell it, of course, when the time is right, you can create your first nest egg, or you can buy up and be able to get something bigger for your family or reinvest and save for the future.
So,
those are all good points, you think?
Oh, absolutely. And so at this point, what would you say is the best way for someone to find out how much home they could afford to buy?
That is a great question. You know, there's so many people. They have a steak appetite, but they only have a budget for hamburgers. So unfortunately, that leads to very unrealistic expectations and disappointments along the way, misunderstandings. So I suggest to anybody preparing to buy a house that they should see a loan expert. And when they see that person, they should disclose everything about their finances. It shouldn't be all rosy dreams. It should be something real. An experienced lender will go through the whole process with the buyer. They're going to review everything about their income, their credit, all their expenses. And then once they go through all that and they pre-qualify the buyer, then they're going to tell them exactly what the top amount is that they should purchase for and not purchase for something more than what they can really afford, so that you can keep your payment exactly where you want it to be.
So what would you say someone really needs to do to be pre-qualified?
Well, that's part of the process, of course. Once you talk to a lender, they'll give you a list of all the documents that you will need. The most basic are things like your pay stubs, your tax returns, bank statements. They will usually do a credit report on you so that they can qualify you for different types of loans. And, of course, if there's any side income or expenses that you have, you definitely want to disclose those too. Now, this process could take a few days at least, so you want to be sure that you understand exactly what it costs to get the loan, not only just what you're going to be paying per month, which is, of course, the most important thing, but how much it's going to cost you. With a good faith estimate, the lender will give you an idea of all the expenses around getting a loan. And that's why doing this step in advance and taking care of all the details gives you an enormous advantage, because then not only will you know what your monthly payment, so there won't be any mystery about it, but you'll also be ready to act when you find the right deal.
So as you're looking to act and you're thinking, okay, what about down payment and what if I don't have it? What thoughts can you offer them on that?
Yes, if you don't have a down payment or you don't really know how to get a down payment, there are some different ways you can do that to get your down payments paid for. Now, a lot of people get gifts from their family members. And often your family would be happy to extend that to you, because they want to help you into your first home. Other people use their retirement or a 401k funds if you have that. Whatever you do about your money, you make sure that it's well documented, even if it's cash. Actually, once I had a client, and he was a high-ranking Navy officer, actually. He was not a kid. And he got his down payment from his father, who sold his house some years ago. But the father kept the money in the form of cash in his safe, so there was nothing documented about that money. So for us to actually prove where he got that money from, that was an enormous challenge. And during the escrow, if that comes up, that's not the good time to handle it. It's very stressful, and it delays, of course, the process of the escrow, and it's possible to lose the property just because you don't have that information straight. So every bank has new regulations. There's different loan programs, different banks, and you want to talk with your lender about your individual situation. You do not want to come up with something at the last minute, and then the lender has to figure out how to handle it. It's better to have all your cards on the table, have all your ducks in a row so the lender can act accordingly and advise you to do exactly what you need to do for the bank that's going to eventually fund your loan. And then they will walk you through what needs to be done, if you need to have a letter explaining where your money came from, if you need to have verification of a family member's bank account as well. Whatever it is, they're going to walk you through that so that you'll know exactly what you need to do.
Well, and that's good information, but aren't there government programs out there that might help people with no money down? And what might those be? How might those work?
Well, that's a terrific question, because a lot of people are dependent on those type of programs, and VA is by far the most well-known because their loans are 100% financed under, I think it's right now it's about $560,000, and then they're still 100%. After that, they may have to pay 25% of the difference. But up to that amount, it is 100% financed loan. But there's also a very popular new loan, CalHafa or something like that, and it's 103% with FHA. FHA is also government-backed, but it's not military. And that's available to low-income families. So they will not only pay for your closing costs, but they'll also pay for your down payment. So that's very, very convenient for many low-income families. And it goes right into the loan. Then there's other programs with grants, but most of the grants have some sort of strings attached. Sometimes you have to take educational classes, or you have to have income verifications to go through. And there's also other types of programs, such as CalPERS, which is for teachers, and that can be a very good loan system. But be careful, because sometimes there's silent second loans. They're not true 100%. They're actually loans that don't charge you interest for a certain amount of time. You want to watch for the small print on those types of loans, because it may have a maturation date, which says after a certain amount you're going to start paying interest. Or they might have a requirement that you have to stay in the house for a certain length of time. So you want to be very sure what kind of program you're actually buying into. And it may sound good, but make sure you know everything that there is to know about it.
So speaking of knowing about different aspects of the funding process, how would we look at, or what can we share with those who are listening regarding earnest money? What is it? How much do they need? What can you share on that?
Well, that's a really good point. A lot of people, especially VA, they're not really aware of this requirement. So what happens when you put an offer on a property, there is a space in the offer where you say how much earnest money you're actually going to give. It's kind of like a good faith deposit. So it's like a deposit that seller knows that you're willing to put your money on the line. You have something at stake in the agreement. And when your offer is accepted, that's the only time that your money actually goes liquid, and it goes right into escrow. So the money is secure in escrow, and the standard amount of that is 1% of your purchase price. And so it can be applied after you go through the escrow process. You can apply it to your down payment or to closing costs. So it's not an extra cost. It's just something that's going to be applied to your fees anyway. Now, if you change your mind about the purchase within a certain period of time and you decide not to buy the house, well, that money is supposed to be refunded to you. So it's not something that would be lost in that case. It's just something that you are putting on the line to show the seller that you're serious about the house.
Okay, and Judy, you were talking about fees. A little earlier we were talking about closing costs being wrapped in. Obviously very important questions that people want to know the answers to. What are closing costs, and who's responsible for taking care of them?
Right. Yeah, these are something that often keep people from buying a house, because First of all, they don't really know how much it is. There's no set amount for a closing cost. And so that confuses buyers. Well, what is it? What? How do I know how much I'm going to have to spend? And that's because so many items in the closing costs are prorated depending on the day of the month that you close. So, for example, if you were to rent a place and you were to rent from the 15th, they might prorate it for the 15 days that you're going to stay in there, and then they start again with the beginning of the month. So the proration makes a difference on exactly how much you're going to end up paying in closing costs. But there's two types of closing costs, recurring and non-recurring. And non-recurring are the set fees, such as escrow, title, recording fees, processing fees. And then recurring items are things like mortgage, taxes, HOA, insurance, and anything that you have to pay monthly. So they reoccur, so they are going to be prorated because it depends on what day of the month you actually close. Now, there are three sources that you can have for funding your closing costs. The buyer could have their own funds, in which case they would be paying cash for the closing costs. Seller credit could be extended. If you ask the seller to pay some of your closing costs, then the seller could also extend that money. It would be in your loan, but nevertheless, then it wouldn't have to come out of the buyer's pocket. And then there's another type of credit, which is lender credit. The lender can also put the closing costs within the interest rate. Now, if you ask a seller to pay closing costs, well, it used to be very normal. A lot of people used to do this, especially for VA buyers, but that was more of a different kind of market when it was more of a buyer's market and the buyer had more control. Seller would be more generous to the buyer because he needed the buyer more than he does in this market. And so, but to be competitive in the seller's market that we're more or less in now, the offer has to look better. It has to be more attractive to the seller. So asking for closing costs doesn't make it that attractive to a seller. So it's something that you want to be determining as you go along. Now, when it comes to lenders, they can often pay it, but what they'll do is they usually raise the buyer's interest rate slightly, which means that you're actually financing your closing costs. Now, a good realtor will guide you through these different strategies because it can be quite confusing as to which is the best way to go. And you want to get down to actual numbers to see what the difference would be right in your monthly payment. So, for example, if you had the seller pay $5,000 closing costs and you had to add it to your purchase price, well, that would be $5,000 more that would be financed. Whereas if you had the lender pay it, they would raise the interest rate, and then you would want to know how much difference that made for a monthly payment. Either way, when you finance something like closing costs, you are paying interest on it through the life of the loan, and that means that you're actually paying a lot more than you would normally pay if you paid cash. Just like any loan, you're going to pay more in interest over the long run. So that's something to consider. Not everybody has the closing cost, so that's something that's very helpful for people to have either the lender or the seller pay it. But if you do have the money, then you'll be saving in the long run.
So we again talk a lot about saving money, and obviously as that comes to home, the key issue I think that most people concern themselves about in the end is really the payment. And the payment oftentimes people are saying have funny letters like PITI. Could you break that down for the listeners a little bit more?
Yes, that's very important. People talk about this type of terms, and it's very important that people do understand that. The monthly payments that you're going to be paying, when the lender gives you their good faith estimate, they will break down exactly what is in the monthly payment. And what's actually in the monthly payment is the PITI, meaning principal, interest, tax, and insurance. So those are the four basic things that are within your monthly payment. that you're going to be paying. Now, a lot of people will pay insurance separately up front, but definitely unless you're putting a large amount of money down, your taxes will be impounded in your payment. So principal, interest, and tax for sure. And then the insurance may be something that you pay outside of your escrow payment. So, and of course, in some communities, you may also have to pay your HOA. And the HOA is a separate fee and also separate payment. So whatever your payment is, they're going to break down. They're going to show you, well, okay, this is how much you're going to have to pay for interest, principal, taxes, insurance, HOA, all the different things that you have to pay per month. Because when they qualify you, they want to make sure that you can cover everything. But when it comes time for you to actually make your payment, usually your payment is just based on the principal, interest, and taxes. And sometimes there's Melrose in certain communities, which is a supplementary tax. So it's important to know the terms, but it's also important to have a lender that can fully explain this to the buyer.
Okay, and that's a great thought there. And what I want to go ahead and expand on now is the fact that as they're making these payments, sometimes things happen. What if they fall behind, or what if they're facing the possibility of falling behind? What should they be thinking about?
Well, you know, when people lose their jobs and disasters happen, these are the kind of things that caused a lot of people so much pain and trouble in the past. But the reason for careful pre-approval with a lender is they want to make sure, both you and the bank want to make sure that you are protected from this type of scenario. Of course, disasters can happen, but mainly if you take a look at a buyer that's been employed for a long time and they seem to be pretty steady on their income, barring certain scenarios, they're looking pretty solid and that they should be able to come up with their payment every month. For those of us who are self-employed, and for a long time, self-employed people were not able to declare a steady income. So we couldn't even qualify to buy a home because we couldn't show that we had a steady income. Now, that shifted a bit, but the banks still want to ensure that even if you have a tough month, you'll still have enough reserves to cover the mortgage. So certain people, if they don't show enough steady income, they might have to show that they have up to 6 months of reserves before they can qualify to buy a house. And that's because they want to make sure that if something did happen, they'd still be able to pay their payments and have the reserves for that. Now, of course, you know, it is an American dream to own a home. Everybody should have their own home if possible. But if a person is not ready or financially stable, then it might be better to wait until they actually are, because the last thing they want to do is go through a foreclosure or bankruptcy. These things they're sometimes unavoidable, but at least you want to start in the right vein that you can afford, and you can cover yourself if you did have something that went wrong for a month or so. Now, remember, the most important is to avoid buying beyond your comfort level. Even though you fall in love with the house, you say, well, yes, I could do it. I want to be able to afford that house. But your life will be so much better if you're not stuck living what we call house poor, where all your income just goes into paying for the house. So that's something that people have gotten into because the dream is that they can have anything they want to, but actually it's better to start with a smaller house or, you know, less grandiose thinking, where they could maybe start advancing in their job and eventually they can go ahead and buy something that would be a little bit larger for their family as it expands. So that's important. I mean, nobody wants to go into this worrying about, well, what if I have a bad month? I mean, that would be unfortunate. So it's better to avoid that kind of problem in the first place. But most lenders will be able to tell you if they think it's risky or not, if it's a good lender.
So as we think about all the good information you've been providing on the real estate wheel, clearly people have to be asking themselves, you know, do I really need a realtor? You know, what's the value in a realtor? And do you have to pay the realtor?
Yes. You know, there's a lot of misconceptions about realtors. A lot of people, when they're starting out, they avoid realtors as though the realtor would be the bad guy in the situation. And so that's a very excellent question. Speaking from my own experience, I've had the honor of representing many buyers, and they benefit from me because as a professional, I bring certain skills to the table, negotiation skills, my knowledge of forms and legalities, my communication abilities with the clients and other agents, and my circle of supporting team members, because even though I am the realtor, I have other people that support me. I have a transaction coordinator. I know people in title and escrow. I have assistants. So there's a lot of things that I bring to the table, including my own brokerage, which has a vast array of knowledge. So, you know, buyers, they think, well, a realtor, that all they do is they're just a glorified tour guide, you know, just showing a house and bringing one to open the houses. And if I could only get in the house myself, I wouldn't need a realtor. But, you know, because everybody can find a house on the Internet, that's not hard to do. But once the house is located, that's where the realtor jumps into action. Here's what I do. I write and present the offers. I negotiate for my clients. And then I evaluate the responses and to advise them how to get the house, how to deal with that other agent. And once we are in escrow, I'm with them every step through all the disclosures, inspections, protecting them like I am their very own legal representation. And you know what? Here's the best part. This is what many, many buyers do not know. They never pay me. They are not going to be the ones to pay me. The seller contracts with his agent, the seller's agent, and they contract how much they're going to pay for the buyer's agent. So I already know how much I'm going to get for that particular deal. I don't have to negotiate it. It's not even a subject that has to come up for the buyer. So this is the best deal for the buyer. The buyer gets complete service and guidance all for free. So in the end of the line, not having professional help is like actually limiting the possibility of getting a good deal. Even though people think that they're going to be saving money, they're not going to be saving money, not a buyer. Maybe the seller will save money. Maybe the seller's agent will double-end it, but it doesn't benefit the buyer. So the buyer has free professional service, and instead of shying away from it, what they really need to do is select their realtor very carefully. This is one of the biggest purchases that you're going to make as a buyer. And so think about what you're doing when you're choosing a realtor. Sometimes they choose somebody just because they're a relative or some friend recommended them, or they offer a big discount. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're the right realtor for you. You want to make sure that they really pay attention to what you need and that they know something, that they're experienced, and that they take your best interest at heart. So working with a competent and diligent realtor is probably the best thing that a buyer can do, especially when they want to buy on a budget.
Well, I think this has been extremely valuable information again, and hopefully those of listening tonight also were paying close attention, because a lot of good things in there that can really help people out. And I know I've been a long-time proponent of using a realtor, but specifically one that has experience, who's available, who's flexible, who really wants to help someone make a difference. And, again, that's one of the reasons I like doing these calls with someone like Judy. You need a realtor with that kind of caliber to really be helping you, or you're doing yourself a real disservice. So, again, I really appreciate the opportunity to help with these calls. And, Judy, I just wanted to know that I thought this was a very good information that a lot of people will get benefit from.
Yes, and I really hope this call has given some helpful tips to buyers and information for the proposed purchase that you're planning to make. And I'd like to thank Dr. Cal Leffler for coming on the line today and adding his experience and his point of view towards these type of transactions. I'd also like to invite people to come and visit the new website I have up. It's Judy Stevens Home Team / teleconference, and I'm going to be sending that out to people so that eventually we're going to be putting recordings of some of these teleconferences right on the website for you and other benefits and bonuses. Tonight will be our final call in this season, and we're hoping to start again on January 5th in the new year. And if you have some suggestions or any ideas about what you'd like to hear for subjects, I'm going to post that, and hopefully we're going to get some answers on what you're interested in hearing about. And Dr. Cal has an enormous amount of information about investing and how to evaluate properties that he's also going to be presenting to you. So I really hope that we can have your interest and tune in for the next conferences coming up, and that everybody has a wonderful holiday season, Thanksgiving and Christmas. And thanks again for tuning in to the Real Estate Wheel Transactions and teleconferences. Thank you, Dr. Cal, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Judy.
Good night.